Branch NMLS number 33041. Rick Rittman's NMLS number 664589. Equal housing lender. Some restrictions apply.
Welcome to Indy's Real Estate Gurus, brought to you by Advisors Mortgage Group and Fix-It Mortgage. Our branch NMLS is 33041. Now, here's your host, the hard-working mortgage guy, Rick Rickman.
Happy Saturday, and thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it very much. Today, we're going to talk about divorce and your mortgage. So do you know anybody who is divorcing, in the middle of a divorce, or maybe thinking about getting a divorce? I'm sure we all do. And you know, I wanted to talk about this because I can't remember the exact day, but I think it's the last day of January, first day of February is like the number one day for divorces being filed. And it's a hugely emotional situation, but it's also a financial situation. And a mortgage is very, very, very much a part of your marriage. If you have a house, it's very much a part of the house is part of the marriage. If there's a mortgage on it, the mortgage is part of the marriage. And so you need to understand it. You need to talk about it. You need to think about it. It's extremely important that we talk about these things. So if you're going through something like this, you know, I think this could be extremely beneficial. If you know somebody, it could help them. Or even if you've gone through a divorce, you know, we can talk about, you know, how the situation and what can be done on a mortgage and how financing works if you're in that situation. So let's just jump right in. The first thing is the timing of filing your divorce petition. The timing of filing a divorce petition with the court, you know, it has a direct impact on mortgage financing. And when a petition for a divorce is filed, most mortgage lenders will require either a temporary settlement agreement or a finalized divorce settlement agreement ordered by the court in order to complete and close a new mortgage application or loan. And what we're talking about there is that once a divorce is filed, until it is completed, we can't close on a new mortgage. You can't go buy a house and close on the mortgage. You can't refinance the home and close on the mortgage. The divorce has to be finalized, and signed off on it by the court, meaning usually in Indiana the judge. So that all has to be taken care of. So before you file for divorce, you have to think about these things. I've had people who have refinanced before a divorce is finalized or before a divorce is filed because they don't want that to be an issue. They've already agreed, so they take care of it beforehand. But once you've filed that divorce, then you can't refinance, you can't purchase. You have to wait until the court has signed off on it. And why is this? Because many things can change during the course of the divorce proceedings. And when maintenance and or child support are part of the settlement, maintenance is not in Indiana, but child support, part of the settlement is a direct impact on either your debt load or your income, which is stated on the application and is also, you know, changes if it negatively impacts your income because you're spending it, that we have to take that into account to qualify for the mortgage. The same applies to the marital debt. And when one party will be ordered as responsible for the payment on the debt, it also has a direct impact on the mortgage application. Please be sure to discuss, you know, if you want to talk about it before you're getting divorced, or if you're in the middle of it, or if you know somebody and you just want to talk about it, just make sure you talk to me before everything happens so we can make a plan and know what the best direction is to go. Sometimes you just can't wait, but you're better to be informed and know what the situation is. Now, if somebody's ordered to pay child support, one of the things that does is it actually lowers your, you know, we have to count that as a debt against you. And if you're getting child support, we can count it as income, but we can't count it immediately. We have to think 3 months. We have to show that you've gotten it for 3 months. We have to, you know, prove it's being paid. Those are the kind of things we have to do. So don't end this kind of the big thing about timing of filing divorce. Don't file the divorce petition and then try to refinance your home or go buy a home. If you want to do that first and then file the petition, or wait till the divorce is final and then file a petition. You just can't do it while the petition is in process. Now, there's also something called the use of ownership rule. And many times divorcing couples agree to hold on to a marital home until a certain event happens in the future, such as a child finishes school. Pretty normal. If you anticipate any type of capital gains when the sale of the home occurs, please be sure your options with your attorney and or financial planner. So you want to talk about that, to talk over the options and how that's going to affect you if you're looking at capital gains. Under the current capital gains tax rule, you're allowed a $500,000 marital couple exclusion on a $250,000 or a $250,000 single exclusion in order to take advantage of the $500,000 marital exclusion, so you can both have $250,000. You must meet both the ownership and use rules. And this sometimes gets people in trouble, so I wanted to go over the rules. To meet the ownership rule, you must both remain on title. Okay, so you have to be on title to the property to be an owner. That one's not usually the one that we run into problems with. It's the use period rule. The marital home must have been your primary residence during the marriage, meaning if one spouse moved out at any time, he, she can still meet the use rule as long as he, she lived in the house as their marital home at any time during the course of the marriage. So you just want to make sure, most people have, but sometimes you get people who don't. They don't live in the same house. So you do have to have lived there in the marital house at some point. That's pretty important. You know, if you want to talk about that, you want to go through it, you want to discuss it, you know, just give me a call, let me know. We can talk about it, go into more detail. Then there's also title vesting. And this is how the title is vested. It's the manner in which the ownership title is held on the property. You know, there's various states have various ways of holding title. However, there's three most common are the tenancy by the entirety, joint tenancy with survivorship, and tenancy in common. And if you are retaining the marital home and leaving any current mortgage financing in place, please be sure to discuss your current title vesting with your attorney, as a divorce judgment can have a default effect on the title. So you need to discuss it with your attorney, make sure there's no issues and how it's being done. It's just one of those things that need to be discussed. For example, if you currently held title as a tenancy by entirety, a divorce judgment will default title vesting to tenancy in common with no right of survivorship. So if you're in tenancy by entirety, the divorce judgment will make it a tenancy in common with no right of survivorship. If you are refinancing the marital home, we need to talk about that. And one of the things, if you're thinking about refinancing the marital home, is, and especially let's say you can't wait, or you're already in the middle of a divorce, but let's say you're filed, but you're still working on it, and you want to keep the marital home, and that's something that is going to be agreed upon. One thing that you should definitely do is give me a call. We should talk about it, because what we really do is need to make sure that you can qualify for the home once the divorce is final. This is one of the biggest issues we run into, and the biggest problems we run into is somebody will go, they'll go through the divorce, they get done, and they sign an agreement that says that they have to refinance the home within 6 months or 60 days or a year or whatever that time is. But they don't have that person wasn't working. They don't have a job. They don't have any income, and so there's no way to qualify. So that can be a big issue. So we need to talk about that beforehand, because we want to qualify and make sure that you can live up to the agreement that you're going to make in the divorce. And also, let's say you can't do it in 6 months, but we get the information, we know what's going to happen, we can figure out when you can do it. You know, let's say you say, well, I'm going to get a job, I'm going to do this. Well, how long do you have to have the job before we can count the income? You know, what's the income going to be? We work that out. How about the, you know, the child support or whatever's coming in there? We work that out. We figure all those numbers out. If all this happens, this is when you can go ahead and refinance the home. So that's what we would do. We would run all those numbers, make sure you can do it, and then we would issue you a pre-approval letter specifically for the divorce on refinancing your home. It's a little odd, but that's what we would do. You take that into your attorneys, and I've been told by many attorneys, they really do appreciate that very much, to have that so that they can use it if they need to show that this person can can do what they're trying to do, and maybe even negotiate the time frame in which they're going to do it. Maybe they were going to try 6 months, but it's going to take 9 months or a year. So they have the pre-approval letter saying if these things happen, in a year they can refinance the home. They get the divorce decree to actually give you the accurate information so that show something you can actually accomplish, which before it wasn't accomplishable. That's something we want to make sure that you can accomplish it, and we'll give you that information. After the break, we'll discuss how to maintain good credit through a divorce.
You're listening to Indy's Real Estate Gurus, brought to you by Advisors Mortgage Group and Fix It Mortgage. Now back to your host, the hard-working mortgage guy, Rick Rickma.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining me. We're going to continue talking about divorce and your mortgage, and we're going to now move on to the contingent liability. Oftentimes in a divorce situation, the divorce settlement agreement will specify which party is responsible for the payments of a specific debt obligation. So let's say you have a credit card that you're responsible, or your ex-spouse is responsible, or a car, whatever. In this situation, where both parties are jointly obligated for the payment of a debt. However, so if both parties are obligated and they say, okay, this one is by court ordered to be responsible for the payment, the debt is now considered a contingent liability. Understand, even the court can't order one party responsible for a payment. Neither party is released from the overall obligation to the creditor. So if you have, let's say you have a house, let's just use a house, and you have a mortgage on it, and the court says, okay, you're responsible for the payment. They order you to make the payment on the house. And then B says, I want to go out and buy a house, and they go buy a house, and they'd say, I don't know anything in the house because a court order said it's hit their responsibility. The reality is that doesn't make any difference to a mortgage company. It doesn't change your liability on the mortgage, because you signed on the mortgage, so you are still responsible. So even though the court may say you're no longer responsible, you still are responsible. Goes for credit cards, goes for cars. You signed on it, you're responsible. The divorce does not change that. And that's something that I have people that really, they don't understand, and it kind of creeps up on them. You have to understand, if you signed on it, you're obligated to that. It doesn't matter. So if you don't have enough money, if you're trying to buy another house and you still have the other house, we still have to count that debt. That's a lot harder to qualify for the new property because of debt to income. So it's just one of those things we want to look at beforehand. So we were talking about the obligation of the creditor. The most common instance in a divorce situation is with current mortgage financing. The court orders one party responsible for a mortgage payment on the marital home. The current mortgage debt is now considered contingent liability and is not counted in the debt to income ratio for the other party when seeking a new mortgage if it's done correctly. See, this is the key, and this is what I wanted to talk about. If it has to be done correctly. If it's not done correctly, if the court doesn't do it correctly, then you are responsible. So you want to make sure that it's done correctly. Because otherwise it's going to be counted and you're not going to qualify. The contingent liability rule is the same for mortgages, installment loans, credit cards, etc. We can review that debt. We can review what debt that still show on your consumer credit report in order to, be paid out off by your spouse, and we can talk about it. We can go through it, but that's something that's critical to be done before the divorce, not after, because then it's too late. We can't really help at that point.
Now it's time for Questions with the Gurus.
I was talking with Sarah yesterday, and she asked me if it was harder to qualify for a mortgage today than it was a year ago. And, I really thought that was a great question, and we really should discuss it, because I think a lot of people believe that it is harder, or hear that it's harder, or think that it's harder, and COVID has changed a lot of things. So the answer is, in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. In some ways, they've increased the rules around what we have to verify and what has to be done. So if you're a self-employed person, yes, it is harder today to finance than it was. It doesn't mean you aren't going to get qualified. It's just that there's a lot more, there's additional things that we have to get that we've never had to verify before. So we have to we have to get 2 months bank statements on your business. You know, most recent 2 months bank statements, and might have to get 12 months if that's what it takes. They want to make sure that you're still bringing in the income. We have to get a P&L done by a CPA. There's things that we now have to get that we never had to get before. It was not necessary for the most part to get this. A lot of times on a self-employed person, we get 1 year tax returns. We get a personal P&L you do yourself. Everything looks good. We were able to go. Now we have to get a lot more information because they're very, very, very worried about the income going away under with everything that's happening in our world today. So in that case, it can be harder. The minimum credit scores went up on conventional and on FHA. You know, we were at 580 on FHA, and now we're at 620 on FHA. We were at 620 on conventional. Now we're at 640 on conventional. And when I say 580 on FHA, we're at 620. With us, there's not. But there are some people who will work with you on the very low credit scores. It'll cost a lot more money and things like that. But there are people who will do that. For the most part, if you have lower credit scores, I like to actually help you get the credit scores back up so we can finance and get reasonable rates and terms and things like that. But there are options out there if you can't do that. So in a self-employed, it definitely became harder. Credit scores came up. Interest rates went down. So you actually, your debt to incomes and things are a little bit easier. You know, they're a little better today. So in that case, it's a little better. But just the basic information that we have to get. They're very worried about people working in the pandemic. So they've lost their jobs. So many people lost their jobs that's the biggest area. It makes it a little more difficult. And we have to get updated pay stubs and bank statements much, much sooner than we had to get before because they expire much quicker. And that's another issue that becomes a problem because you have to get them. And with the volume of business, it's taken a little longer to refinance or, you know, to purchase, you're going to get done in the 30 days because that's what has to do because that's what you have on your closing date. On a refinance, it's going to take a little longer and those things are going to expire and we're going to have to get new bank statements and new pay stubs. That's just kind of how it is if it takes long enough that they expire. And that's unfortunate, but that is, and it may never have happened before if you've done this in the past and it wouldn't normally happen, but it's because of COVID. And they changed the rules. Additionally, a lot of people now are working out of their homes. And I'm talking about in the mortgage industry, our underwriters, our processors, you know, many of the loan officers, you know, are not working in an office. And because they're not working in the office, that also can create and has created some slowdown in how things get done. And it's just something that most people just have to be a little patient in today's market and you'll be fine. Everything will work out. It's just the way it is. So it is one of those things where it has gotten a little bit more difficult, but for the most part, it's not horrible, and it's not a good thing. It's good, but it's not. I had a friend who used to say, how was that restaurant? He goes, well, it wasn't horrible, which meant I was never going to go there, and he didn't mean it was horrible. He just meant that it just is a habit of saying it. In this case, you can get through. We're closing some loans most loans in a timely fashion. It's not too much paperwork. It's a little more than normal, but it is what it is, and it's definitely worth it because rates are at ridiculously low levels. But let's get back to divorce and your mortgage. I want to talk about qualifying income and the 636 rule. There is a significant difference between what is viewed as an income and what counts as qualified income. And this is something people get confused at or they don't understand because they don't look at it the same way we do in the mortgage business. In a divorce situation, there is oftentimes the receipt of maintenance, child support, and income from a property settlement note. Okay, so there can be income, which while each constitutes as income, each source must meet specific requirements to be considered as qualified income for mortgage financing. In order to utilize maintenance and or child support as income for a mortgage, financing purposes, each spouse must meet the 636 rule. You must be able to provide documentation showing receipt of this income for the previous 6 consecutive months. Do you hear that? For the previous 6 per consecutive months. Additionally, at the time of the mortgage application, there must remain 36 months of future payments due to you. That's 33 years of continuance, 36 months of future payments due to you. So you have to have received it for 6 months, and you have to have 36 months of future payments due to you at the time of the mortgage application. Otherwise, this portion of your actual income cannot be considered as income for mortgage financing purposes. Likewise, for income from a property settlement note, you must provide 12 months proof of receipt, as well as 36 months of future payments due. This is one of those things we definitely would want to talk about, make sure you understood, make sure there was no issues there. But it's really important. And let's say when you first file for divorce, it's one of the reasons that it can make sense, because there's some ways we can work it out. If when you're going through the divorce, if the person who's going to be getting the child support can make the child support, because many times they're getting child support, but it's not an agreement. If you can make the child support before the divorce, an agreement while you're going through the process, and let's say the process takes 3 months, that 3 months can be counted in that six consecutive months. That's a very big help if you can get that done, so that you can get into the house or refinance the house much quicker if you understand that and you know how to make that work. A lot of people don't, so it's very why I wanted to talk about. It's important that we talk about that. And let's talk about equity buyout. In a divorce situation, when one spouse is required to refinance the marital house to give the departing spouse a cash settlement for their share of the equity in the marital house, it is considered an equity buyout. So if you normally, or many times what happens is there's a split in the equity of the home. If let's say you have $100,000 in equity, each spouse gets $50,000. There's some other nuances where you might have a 401k or something like that, and you just exchange, you know, that takes care of some of the equity, whatever. But many times that's you have the equity buyout, and we see this a tremendous amount. There are a couple mortgage financing guidelines to take into consideration in an equity buyout situation. The divorce settlement agreement should state the dollar amount and or percentage of equity the departing spouse is to receive. The benefit to you is that when it's an equity buyout is stated in the divorce settlement agreement. So you've got divorce, you have your agreement, it's stated in there. You will receive a lower interest rate and avoid a cash out refinance, which carries a higher interest rate and lower loan to value ratios. So what happens is if you don't do this, the loan to value we're limited to on a cash out is 80%, and the interest rate's going to be higher because it's cash out. If it's an equity buyout, that supersedes the cash out. It's not a cash out. It's not considered, but it has to have it stated in the divorce decree, and it has to be an exact number. So what you normally would do is you would get an appraisal beforehand so you knew the value of the property. Now, the appraisal you get will not be usable for a finance, and should be just for the divorce, and it should be stated that way. I can talk to you about that if you want to look at that, on what type of appraisal you need if you're looking at doing that. The entire amount of the equity taken out of the home must go directly to the departing spouse at closing of the new mortgage. You know, no cash out in any amount can go directly to you, or it will be considered an equity. It will not be considered an equity buyout, and it will be a cash out in the refinance situation. In other words, the higher rate and the lower loan to value, lower loan to value will be in effect. So you want to make sure you do this correctly, and that you do not take any cash out when you're doing it. It has to all be the equity buyout and going to the spouse, and it has to be going there from the closing. So the title company would distribute that money to the spouse. There's a 90-day cash rule also. And if you are considering purchasing a new home with cash to avoid any potential mortgage financing during the divorce process and plan to take a mortgage out in the future, you should understand the 90-day cash rule from both a mortgage perspective as well as the IRS tax perspective. I am not an accountant. I'm not a CPA. I'm just giving you kind of the basic information. I highly recommend you talk to your CPA or your tax advisor or attorney. Additionally, if you take a mortgage out after 90 days of paying, so you pay cash for a property, and then you want to take a mortgage out 90 days later, you may be limited to the amount of the mortgage interest you can deduct on your federal income tax. Please be sure to discuss this with your attorney or your tax advisor. I am not that. There are two types of mortgage interest. There's the acquisition indebtedness and home equity indebtedness. Each type has its own limitations and requirements. If you are considering paying cash for a home, a new home, and plan on mortgaging the home in the near future, please let me know, because there are timing issues that we have to talk about. There's different rules that we have to talk about if you're doing that. You can't just go pay cash and then walk in and want to recoup all of your money, and it just doesn't work that way. There's time frames in which we can do it and get a certain loan to value. If you need more than that, we have to wait. There's just all kinds of rules around it that we really would need to talk about before you moved. You know, you did that and then ended up in a situation where, you know, you couldn't do what you wanted to do because we hadn't talked about it. The next thing I want to talk about is maintaining your credit during the divorce. And maintaining the credit is critical. And I've seen some people that it's just a shame because they go from high sevens to 800 down to sixes and 500s, and it's a very, very tough situation. So maintaining your credit during a divorce can sometimes be a challenge. However, understanding what impacts your credit scores ahead of time can be beneficial. And so here are a few suggestions to help maintain your credit during the divorce. Communication between both spouses can help avoid any miscommunication on who is paying what bill. So make sure you know who's paying what bill and that those bills are being paid. Ask each creditor that extended you credit to transfer the debt to the name of the person who will be responsible. They may or may not do that, but if they'll transfer the debt to whoever you've decided is responsible for it, then you don't have to worry about it. They may have to refinance it to do this, but there may be times they'll actually transfer it. So you want to ask. Keep joint bills current. Even missed payments made years after the divorce will be reported for all individuals associated with the account. If you miss a payment, it doesn't matter if it was the spouse's responsibility, the payment's missed, and if you're on the debt, it's going to affect your credit, and it's going to negatively affect your credit. It's going to be a problem. It also is going to be part of your debt-to-income ratios and can hurt that also if they run the credit up. Ask the credit grantor to remove a spouse who is only an authorized user or close the joint account to avoid additional charges. So sometimes you'll put your spouse on as an authorized user. If you get a divorce, you want to stop that. That may be something you forgot, but just get rid of it. You don't want them to be able to charge on your account, so you want to get rid of that. You do not want that authorized user. Advise creditors that one spouse is not responsible for the debt charges by another to join accounts after the divorce. It doesn't hurt to do this. They may or may not listen to you, but it certainly helps to try to communicate to everybody. It's kind of really what we're talking about here. Most of it is communicate and pay the bills. Make sure all the bills are paid. And close as many joint accounts as you possibly can. If you have joint accounts, get rid of them if you can. If you're going through a divorce, you don't want those. Get rid of those so that the other person can't negatively affect your credit and your paying of your ability to go out and finance. You have the ability to access your credit report from all three credit bureaus, from Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion annually. Now, it doesn't give you your credit scores, but you can look at your credit report. You can see what it's reporting and what debts you have. You just go to annualcreditreport.com. It's a free report, annualcreditreport.com. This is something that the feds require the bureaus to provide. So it's free. You can do it once a year. And again, it's annualcreditreport.com, and you can get your free report. If you have questions on that or you want to talk about it, you know, let me know. Just go to hardworkingmortgageguy.com, and you can contact me from there. Again, hardworkingmortgageguy.com. I appreciate you being here today, and I thank you so much. If you need anything, please let me know. Just go to hardworkingmortgageguy.com, and have a great Saturday.